Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome back to Influential She. This is our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp. And today we're going to talk about our high leverage practice of as if. And I think that this, when I think of as if or acting as if, it's the whole concept around, you know, how it's so tempting to just sit around and wait for something to happen in our lives. And boy, I can think back, and I did that a lot. You know, so we sit around, we wait, we think, okay, if I wait and if I have everything planned out perfectly, something's going to happen. Well, you know, luckily at some pieces and points of our lives, I think, Deb, we can say that things did occur. But, you know, what if we would have missed that opportunity? So, I think it's really, that's how we wait sometimes for permission, maybe, or we wait for something to happen. And it's not always the way that we want women to approach their lives.
Well, and you know, I think I love our tagline with this, Mel, where we talk about just proceed until apprehended. Because, you know, and we even say, you know, you're going to roll your eyes at this, but your mother told you this, and then we're going to tell you this, that you get what you think about. And there is just a certain amount of energy in the world that wants to work with us if we get our intentionality straightened out. And I think so many times we feel space bound and place bound, and yet we can, it's not only envisioning the possibility, it's starting to acquire acting as if I'm already in that possibility. But the thing is about as if is, it's not always comfortable, is it, Mel? I mean, you're sort of perceived a little mutant because you might be stepping outside of what is the conventional lane that everybody wants you to stay in, because there's some preconceived notions about you being a woman, or for you being a teacher, or me being a nurse, that, you know, like nurses just don't do that. They just don't think that creatively, or they aren't as involved in their community. You know, if you're a bedside nurse, you're a bedside nurse, and you don't move outside of that lane. As if is really about, I may be in this place, but I can start to learn and grow as if I'm in that space where I want to be. And we've got a super exciting podcast guest today, don't we, Mel, that's going to talk about her life in totally as if.
Yeah, we do. And I'm just so happy and excited to introduce today Ray Hughart. And I'll tell you what, I'm trying to think back, Ray. You know, I bet we've been in social media conversations for a while with other colleagues and friends, but I didn't officially meet you until I saw you as part of a Saturday, actually, conversation with a number of other educators. And I thought, I've got to connect with this woman because, number one, I love your energy. And number two, I think that you are going to bring something to our conversation today that really speaks to what we want to exemplify in the high leverage practice of as if. So, hey, thanks, Ray, for accepting our invitation, and we're excited to have you today.
Oh, I'm so thrilled. You guys have been the best to connect with. Can I just tell you, like, I am such a fan of the podcast. I've already subscribed. I listen, and I'm so honored to be a part of an episode because I love the message you're sharing and the work you're doing. So this is really a treat.
Oh, thanks. And, you know, Ray, you are a pretty amazing young woman, I do have to say. So I'm going to give this title, but then we're going to get into the real Ray Hughart that we really want to share with the world.
We'll give you all the details, all the secrets.
No, but there's a lot to you, and where you've come is truly impressive. So at this point in time, you really have a couple roles you play. You're a middle-level math educator. And for those of you who are educators out there, I know that you teach middle school. It takes a really special person. You either got to love those little people, or, you know, you're just like, are you got to be kidding?
Because you have to a love special hormones. Gift. Yeah. You have to love hormones.
Well, that's what we joke about. I'm a sixth grade math teacher. I mean, it's all sarcasm and they smell. I mean, it's awesome.
You got to match their energy. But you also do something that is probably the reason I met you. You're the CMO for what's something called the Teach Better Team, but you've also done a TEDx, which is pretty amazing. So listeners, you got to listen into Ray's TEDx. And you're the author of Teachers Deserve It and Teach Better Books. So that in itself just makes me in awe of you because you've books you got, a couple books out there. So Ray, let's start there. How in the world, you know, what are those positions and what exactly do you do? So let's talk about that first.
Yeah, I know. That's a great question. It's so funny when I go through what I do, because I typically say, oh, I'm a teacher and I also get to work with teachers. And that kind of puts it in simplest form. But the reality is I'm a podcast host. I'm a speaker. I'm the CMO of the team. I'm in the trenches with students every single day. I literally just got back from school just a few minutes ago before we hopped on this conversation, and, you know, able to publish books, and the TEDx was such a dream. It was kind of a bucket list item. So there's a lot of little things that I do, but to be honest, what I've found is that while I keep a very busy schedule, they're all things I love. I mean, there are people who talk about being busy, but the difference is that when you're busy with things you love, then you kind of enjoy being busy. And there's this quote that one of my great friends, and he's the co-owner of the Teach Better team, Jeff Gargas, always says is, oh, you know, if you find a job you love, you never work a day in your life. And we always joke, well, hold on. We're working our tushes off. We hustle like crazy, but there's joy that's found in it. So I really do love kind of serving in both roles right now. I've been a teacher for a little under a decade, and I do really enjoy getting to hang out with 11-year-olds and talk through math problems, but then also get to support teachers, whether it's educators that I work with on the Teach Better team or our massive network that supports all types of learners and educators in that entire school ecosystem.
You know, and we will get into all this, these amazing things you do. But I think the one thing in knowing your backstory that just has me so, I think, humbled and intrigued by what you've done is you didn't come to this in the really an easy way. So I think people would think this has got to be, this woman had it, you know, throughout her education background was just like this star student. I mean, for goodness sakes, you're teaching math, Ray, which is one of the most difficult things to do. Is that you grew up, you know, struggling in school. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, if any of you are able to listen to my TEDx presentation that you can find at TED.com, I really go into this story a little bit, how I grew up in a beautiful area, a very affluent area in the Chicagoland. I had wonderful support systems, not only with my biological family that I love, but we also had family friends that were practically family, right? They attended every possible event and have been a part of my life since I can remember. But the reality is that even our students that have the best of the best support can struggle. And in second grade, I was diagnosed SLD in reading, writing, and math. And for those of you listening who are not educators, SLD is just a specific learning disability. There are definitely ways to make that more identified now, but at the time, it's just kind of this general label. And at the time, I really struggled primarily with reading, but also it had to do with taking letters and putting them together. So it eventually ended up being a real detriment to learning math as well. But with the support of obviously a lot of people, I was able to find tools and resources that helped. And I don't know that I knew it at the time. And I can confidently say at the time, I just hated school. That was purely my mindset. But truly, the resources that I used when I was in sixth grade, you know, language arts with my special education teacher on one side and my ELA teacher on the other, the tools and resources they handed me, I still use today when I am working, you know, in my roles now. So
Ray, you talk about having all this support to get through. I mean, first of all, I think it was key that, you know, people sorted out there was something going on with you. Because I think there's a lot of kids that, you know, I think it's better now in the education system, but there's a lot of kids that sort of get missed, like they're hanging on because mm-hmm. they do have these really supportive families and there's kind of this cover up about what sort of is going on. So you obviously had people that were willing to peel back the onion and kind of get to the truth of the matter. And you had all these supports, but somewhere you turned something on for yourself where, you know, being in this really quite vulnerable space with all this support and different from other kids, not all kids, but different from a lot of kids in your learning capacity. So how did that happen? How did you start just saying, I could act something different? Even though I have all these things going on, I'm going to be this person.
Yeah, I won't lie. I mean, my mindset forever was that if you can't read, you can't learn. because everything in school was handing someone an article or reading out of a textbook. And truly, I can't read. I'm you know, a decade into my career, and I will, you know, wholeheartedly admit, I don't read text. I consume about 80 to 90% of text in audio form, thanks to, you know, so many different tech resources that we have in our computers and on our phones. And, you know, while those existed, it definitely was something that I was apprehensive to using. No child wants to be different when they're sitting in school or, you know, in a learning environment. But for me, while I hated 8 hours of my day in school, I, after school, was involved in a dance studio. And that dance studio, I think, was a big changer for me. That studio gave me so much confidence because the owner, Laverne Lehman, who's still the most incredible woman that I've ever met in my entire life, she's known me since I was about 3 years old. I mean, I was, you know, learning dance. I then became a teacher. I taught classes at the dance studio. And at the time, I was being told in high school classes, well, Ray, you're not going to college, so what's your plan? And at the dance studio, she was saying, well, why don't you become a dance teacher? And I was like, well, you know, I can't read a book. I can't pass classes. I think I'm the only sixth grade math teacher in the history of sixth grade math teachers who's gotten a D in sixth grade math. But I was like, well, I mean, I could teach dance. I love ballet. I love interacting with the students. So maybe that's an avenue for me. And to be honest, I think that that was the first intentional moment I can remember feeling confident in something.
Talk a little bit about how that felt, like this, okay, I'm successful in dance, but over here, I'm feeling a little less confident in what's going on in school and this whole paradigm of if you can't read, you can't learn. I mean, that's a big hurdle to overcome. So how did that feel, like, inside of you? And how did you start to work your way through that?
Yeah, I think there's probably 100 different emotions that somebody could identify. For me, truly, it was pure embarrassment. I have exceptional parents. They are exceptional at their jobs. They're exceptional in their personalities, and they are high achieving. I am also, I also have a sister who's, I mean, a genius. And all of our friends and family were very well achieving, you know, people, very successful people, not only financially, but just in their career fields. And so I think the majority of my upbringing was pure embarrassment, which really harms, you know, your mental state, you know, at any point in life. But that was very, very challenging.
So how did you get that trajectory then to go to college?
It's a great question. So I dropped services for my IEP in my sophomore year because I was too embarrassed to apply to college and identify as an IEP student. Because you do need to, you know, obviously claim those supports if you want to utilize them in higher ed. And I had a tutor my entire life, twice a week. My grandmother is a teacher, and she tutored me twice a week since like second grade. And about freshman, sophomore year, she started tutoring me every day for the SAT and ACT just to get a score that could get me into college. And I think I finished tutoring with her my senior year. I think I took the test about 3 or 4 times. And I got like a 20, which was like not high at all, but it was enough to at least apply to community colleges. I was trying to figure out like where this could go. And on a whim, I applied to my REACH school, which was Illinois State University, and just to hope that they would accept me. And I have no idea what happened, but they let me in. And, you know, not a decade later, I not only graduated with my undergrad and middle level education, but I graduated with my master's from there. I was actually on faculty last year and was able to teach some courses. And Illinois State University opened up so many different opportunities for me. And whoever let me in, oh my gosh, do I owe them a big cookie?
So what was that college experience like? I'm just curious. Was it a smooth sort of experience?
No.
Or
oh
did you
gosh,
just find...
No.
Okay.
No.
I was assuming maybe a little rough and rugged, but how'd you get through that?
No, you know, I worked my butt off, but I won't lie. I think I realized at that point that if I actually wanted to utilize this opportunity that I was handed of going to college, then I needed to utilize all the resources that I had been avoiding my entire time in school. And so I spent a lot of time probably, you know, more than most, more than my friends for sure, studying and trying to pass classes. And a lot of them, my GPA was not high. But, you know, you can graduate with a, you know, 3.0 and still get a certificate and still be able to do your job. So I hustled real hard in college, I won't lie, but I wanted to say that I could graduate from college. Even getting in was a moment. So the opportunity to graduate was something I didn't actually expect. So I wasn't going to let that go too easy. That's for sure.
You have taken this now from being a teacher, sixth grade math teacher, and then all of a sudden your world has exploded. So what, how in the world did you get from that to this and all these other steps along the way? So, I mean, obviously there's something, you have this drive, but I'm, that's just a really fascinating trajectory because you were celebrating those big, but you know, in comparison, small milestones along the way. So think about the Ray that was thinking and excited about getting into college to where you are today.
Yeah, getting into college was that huge fuel because I originally thought I was going to be a dance teacher. So when I finally got into college, I kind of realized there was this shift. I don't know how to explain it, but I was like, well, why am I only becoming a math teacher or a dance teacher? I just achieved something I never thought I was going to achieve. If I'm going to go and be an educator, I'm going to go work in the hardest spot and I'm going to figure out a way to excel because I just did something that I never expected to be able to do. So I switched my major. I became a middle-level education major, and you have to choose two areas to be endorsed in. So I chose math and science, are my two least favorite subjects. And I ended up before graduating, getting my writing certificate as well because I hated writing. And I was like, okay, what are the worst subjects? Sign me up. And I decided if you're going to struggle in life, then you better go out fighting hard. And so my mindset was, I'm going to be the best sixth grade math teacher out there because sixth grade math stunk. So if I can make it a little bit better by pulling from either a mindset that maybe isn't typical or even just pulling in experiences that I did like in my upbringing, like my incredible family, if I could bring family into my classroom and, you know, pieces like that, that really was the fuel. And that's where I started my career. I started teaching in a town that I had never heard the name of until they offered me the job. And I was like, oh, I should probably Google where that is. And I connected with an incredible group of students my first year. And we just focused on the things that I cared about because I had the tools and resources to be a teacher. And then the rest was building it so it was fun and hopefully making some sort of impact.
We could just say, all right, listen to Ray, and this is what we're talking about with As If. I mean, sure. Because there are so many examples that you just gave about, you could have like, conventionally listen to what everybody else said to you, hardly get into college, doesn't have the right GPA, seriously, someone that struggles this hard to learn wants to become an educator to teach other people how to learn. I mean, that's just almost what? Like, who is she? What does she think she's doing? And yet in As If, it's envisioning for yourself a passion where you talked about your passion. Like if I could make that sixth grade math, even though I kind of hate math, I think math could be groovy and cool. And so you envisioned something different and then you started acting as if that was possible.
Well, and it was interesting as I was reading more about the incredible work you guys are doing, As If was something that I connected with very quickly, but I won't lie, it had nothing to do with the part of my life that we're talking about right now. Because at that point in my life, I wanted to be successful because I had never felt success before. And so I was pursuing and hustling more than ever before simply because I liked the feeling of doing something that you could do well. And a lot of it was also trying to pay back my parents for all the hard times for me to eventually look at them and say, hey, mom, dad, like, look, I did something, like all the work that you guys did to get me there. Look, I'm doing what you wanted. And so this concept of as if, of envisioning what you wanted, actually came so much more of my reality in 2018. Because in 2018, I was teaching full time. I was just new to the Teach Better team. I was about a year or so in, and I was watching my marriage fall apart. And as I was literally watching, doing everything humanly possible with every counselor in the town that I was living in, trying to save this sinking ship, and it was killing me. Truly, like emotionally, that is such a devastating experience. I was very cognizant of not wanting to lose myself in that experience while also doing all these other things I loved. So as you're watching, you know, an incredible relationship fall apart, but then also excelling at work and working your butt off with students and wanting them to be successful, I started focusing a lot more than ever on this, you know, this concept, because I was trying to envision you know, how am I going to get out of where I am right now? Well, I can start envisioning where I want to be in a year, where I want to be in 2 years. And I'm just going to start living as if I'm there, because at least then I'll be happier, because operating this miserable mindset is so toxic.
Okay. So now, Ray, you've opened up for our listeners an incredible vulnerability about life itself and how these things are happening and unfolding in such a positive way, what's going on with Teach Better and, you know, all these opportunities for you. But on the other hand, you have something very painful that is this fundamental thing that's going on in your life. Talk a little bit about how you started to trust which way to go, because it's very hard to have the courage to listen to yourself and trust it to decide.
So I was lost for a long time. And I think I was really struggling because I was internally really just down in the dumps. You know, I also outwardly was very cognizant of the fact that I had a network that had their eyes on me. And I don't mean their eyes on me in a way that they were judgmental, but more so at the time, especially of where Teach Better was, at, you know, as a small startup, we were building a network where we were the safe haven. We were the positive people. We were the solution seekers. So there really wasn't an opportunity for me to outwardly struggle. At least it didn't feel that way at the time. And I look at the year 2019, I have a tattoo on my hand of the numbers 19, because it was the best and worst year of my entire life. Because in the professional sense, I signed a book contract. I wrote my first book. I hosted the first Teach Better conference with the Teach Better team, which was the best 4 days of my entire life. I was teaching in the best job. I loved my colleagues, my teammates. This was one of the many years that everything kind of aligned, and you taught the best students with your best friends, and you know, you have a supportive administration. I mean, professionally, we were killing it. We made the most money that we had ever made that year, you know, at that current time in 2019, and we were seeing our community thrive over this concept of Teach Better, of carrying a Teach Better mindset, right? Being better today than you were yesterday and better tomorrow than you were today. And yet 2019 was also when I was signing divorce papers. It's when my husband moved out of my house. It's when, all these things were at the exact same moment. And so when you look at, you know, how do you know when you should be hopeful or, you know, kind of give up? And I think for me, I really believed that there's no way professionally things can be going this well. There's no way one area of your life could be so strong and that there's no hope for the other, if that makes sense.
Makes complete sense. And I think that, yeah, you know, those are things that sometimes, you know, it'd be interesting, right? If the one carried you through the other,
Yes.
You know, so that was the thing that you could gravitate to and carry on. But I just know that there was also, in there, a medical scare that went along with it. So We're going, you know, a very personal relationship, you know, issue, a medical thing. And then we go into COVID. So how did those three, the trifecta, affect you as a person? Because obviously, career-wise, you just continued and you forged ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting. If you keep looking at those months and timelines, I feel like I could go like month by month. One positive that happened that month, one negative that happened. I signed another book contract. I had another book come out in 2020. But yes, I mean, you know, I was getting divorced and, you know, COVID hit. And this was not only the first time I was living alone since, you know, forever, but also, you know, during COVID, people were feeling so isolated. And I was, you know, feeling that embarrassment, similar to what we talked about as a child, mm-hmm. feeling embarrassment of things going on and not knowing how to handle your life. I mean, they really came back in 2020. And, you know, you're chatting with people on the outside who are saying, oh, it's really challenging me and my family. You know, thank God we have food. Thank God we have money. We haven't lost our jobs yet. And you're really trying to be supportive. But on the flip side, I thought my company was going to go under in 2020 because all of our clients canceled all their business because we work with schools and they've been closed for most of 2020. And you know, we were just trying to do our best in both realms. And then, yeah, I had the cancer scare. So, I think as we continue to look at the positives and negatives of our life, it really comes down to kind of what I shared at the beginning about filling your calendar with things you love. And I knew that right at that point, I didn't have what I was looking for, but I was eager to find what that could be. And I can tell you, you know, now a year later, Like, I created that light at the end of the tunnel, and it was only by this concept that you guys speak so beautifully on of envisioning what you want and just striving to live that life even when it isn't necessarily yours yet.
I'm so glad you were able to share that with us and with our listeners too, because I think sometimes there's a perception out there, and particularly because you've been so successful in the things that you've done, that life is just perfect. You know, life isn't always what it appears to be. And sometimes, and I do believe it's really critically important sometimes that we let people see that other side of us, because then it gives hope. It gives hope that, you know what, you're going to be okay, but what do you have to do?
And I think that that's an important concept. You know, I have spoken to close friends about this concept, never publicly like this on a podcast, but a few people had pushed back and said, oh, Ray, you're being so fake, right? So the day that my husband moved out and, you know, became no longer my husband was I went live like a half an hour afterwards. And we did a live training professional development session on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch from the Teach Better team. And my colleagues, my friends have pushed back and said, Ray, you shouldn't be fake to your network. But I really didn't see it as being fake. I was not putting on, you know, I was putting on a smile in some capacity, but there truly is like a part of me, a large part that loves what I do. And I think when you carry that mentality of seeing the bigger picture, seeing where you're trying to head, it's not fake because I'm just putting myself in the body that I want to have in a year, right? So I think there's some balance, you know, whether you're a teacher listening, a nurse listening, or anything in between, you can go through hard times and you can have one thing in your day mess up everything else, right? You go to the gas pump and the gas pump is broken. You got to start your car again and go around, and it can totally throw off the rest of your day. But the reality is that you have control over that. So if you can say, okay, I'm not going to let the negative that happened in my morning influence everything else, the easiest way I've found to overcome that quickly is to say, who do I want to be today? Because I don't want to be the one that's stuck in a negative state. I really want to always be the one that is helpful and positive and solution seeking.
Well, Ray, you talk about being in this container today of how I am, but then there's something else and I'm going to start acting as if. And Mel and I have seen that when we were in that space, that's when our influence really started to grow. Mm-hmm. Because we were defining it and thinking about it and moving forward toward it and acquiring growth that others didn't have to define for us. You know, right. I mean, and things that we wanted to learn and to talk about and to be a part of that might not necessarily seem traditional, whether that's traditional as a woman and a mother and a wife and a coworker. And, you know, whatever profession that you're in. And that's why we saw this concept of really proceed until apprehended as being such an important one to, you know, move your influence sooner. And you're really doing that with this Teach Better.
Well, I appreciate it. I do love what I do at Teach Better. And it's, I think that your focus on encouraging, inspiring and supporting women is a huge thing that we need right now. That is a gap that continuously needs to be filled. One of the few things I think of, and I don't mean to open another can of worms, but you know, women pursue so much, but they also find so many hurdles or benchmarks that they need to stay within. One of the most comical discussions that happened about 3,500 times in 2020 was I changing my name because I had gotten divorced? But I had published two books and I was scheduled to do a TED presentation and I had built a career and my network, I have friends that know me by my name. And so it's funny when you're talking, if you were talking about just in generality, I don't know that that would have been an issue, but for women, like that is a topic that we discuss because it's a common traditional practice that you change your name when you're married. So,
well, and think about it. Women are the only ones that really end up doing that. Yes, of course, you know, sometimes men have a hyphenated name and they're a part of their spouse's name, but not that often. You know, it's really more of a reclaiming of yourself, no matter what you want to call yourself. I mean, that's really proceeding until apprehended, Ray.
Well, and to your point, truly, and this is what I love about not only sharing what you've shared previously, but in other episodes I've listened to, if you're okay with who you are, society shouldn't have an influence. Like we truly are achieving so much that having outside voices, they should only be outside voices that are welcomed because otherwise they should be silenced, you know, in the capacity of having a voice in some of these concepts. And it was a very hot topic. I still to this day have people talking to me about it of, you know, name change versus no name change. And then go back to embarrassment. I kept most of all these things to myself because no one was asking. So, you know, you don't, you know, kind of air your dirty laundry. And yet my parents have been like kind of this joke on the Teach Better Team Live segments. My parents are very comical. They've been brought on to some live series and they are Julie and Jim Ford. Well, when Julie and Jim Ford show up and they're the parents of Ray, it's very comical how much the name conversation became an issue. Yeah.
Now that's a great story, Ray. I just think about how, so I'm going to segue a little bit, but how all of our high leverage practices are intertwined. And one of ours is about story and how important it is that we share our stories because it's easy to keep them to ourselves. And that story that you're just sharing right now is something that I bet there's other women or people can relate to and go, I didn't know that about Ray or whatever, that just brings this really human aspect to you. But it's also so critically important for women to be able to own their story and who they are, to become more influential and also to really draw people in because it's easy to put up that wall, you know, and it would have been easy for you, right? Nobody would have ever known, really. You know, you could have just kept this to yourself in your professional life. Sure, you can have those close friends, but that really helps you personally, but also professionally to really grow.
And I do have to say, you know, all joking aside, I think it's important to, you know, conclude this story as we transition, I'm sure, to 100 different topics, but I love who I am. Like, I love my name. Ray Hewitt has been my name for almost a decade. It's something that I'm very proud of. And I like who I am so much more for all the things that I've been able to do and have a hand in. So I was so honored to be able to keep my name because that's who I identify with. And so that's me. That's who I am.
So Ray, let's talk just a little bit about, okay, now you are proceeding until apprehended in a whole new lane. I mean, you're teaching sixth grade math, but then you're also moving outside of that to really help this community of education really become as if something else. And, you know, the paradigm of education, there's been multiple fits and starts, really. I mean, there's all kinds of different programming that has come out and independent learning and all different styles. Tell us a little bit about what you envision in this space and how you're really acting as if to get there.
Sure. So the Teach Better team is a collection of educators that are located around the, you know, North America, essentially, in terms of the team, that just strives to be supportive to other educators, strives to inspire other educators, and tries to connect other educators. And, you know, it's beautiful seeing how it's grown. We now have a network that's, you know, global. And all of these pieces in terms of how we support, how we inspire, and how we connect really has to do with what our network needs. I think there's nothing more important for any business than to listen to the audience. And we have an audience that is willing to share, which is such a blessing because we're eager to listen and, you know, put in different support. So, you know, when the team originally was started by the incredible Jeff Gargis and Chad Ostrowski, they built this team in hopes of just supporting educators with mastery learning, specifically how to build a classroom where students get personalized and individualized support. And while that concept is still absolutely a core pillar of everything we do, we realize that you can't just stop there. Just as we have to teach the whole child, we also have to support and connect and inspire the whole educator. And so now, if you ever, you know, have a chance that you're listening right now, head to teachbetter.com. We have everything from multiple blogs published a day. I just looked today, we had 4 blogs published this morning. And, you know, we have a podcast network of educators located around the world, just amplifying voices, sharing insight for, you know, these are all free things. We have a mastermind of, you know, administrators that get together and talk shop. And, you know, whether it be a course in our academy or a live professional development, which is, you know, I guess how we make money, like the concept is truly about seeing more than what you have right now. And I think that's where that mindset, the Teach Better mindset, came from, of better today, better tomorrow. Because whether you're an educator, a nurse, or anything in between, that mindset set is something everybody can carry and apply.
Okay, so I'm really curious, what do you envision for yourself 10 years down the road? I mean, you're young. Yeah, I'm just curious. So what do you think is the next thing?
You know, I have loved being a teacher. I will continue to be a teacher for the rest of my life in some capacity. But there has been a beauty in working with a team. Our team has quadrupled in size in the past year. And it's been fascinating to me working with other educators and seeing, you know, fostering their leadership and everything else. So while I don't know where I will be, I can only imagine that I will continue to be an educator, maybe with different students, you know, as we continue to grow. But, you know, if there was a concept of what I wanted to leave behind, it really comes back to, and I think I've told this story before, but when I had shoulder surgery in 2019, also something fun that happened that year, I had a doctor, I was very nervous, and a doctor came in right before the surgery with a big needle. And I was like, oh, you know, this is the last thing I want to be dealing with. Just knock me out, doc. I don't want to deal with any of this. I'm so nervous. And he had kind of said this phrase to me that stuck with me. He's like, Ray, I've had people with worse injuries than you, and I've had people more nervous than you. No stress. I gotcha. And that's kind of the same mentality. I want to provide all these educators. If you're listening right now and you're an educator, we gotcha. I don't know how. I don't know what you need, but we'll figure it out. And if we can't figure it out, we know people. And we'll introduce you and figure you, you know, have somebody figure it out with you. So that mindset, I think, is really important. And so if that's all I can say that I can predict, then it's not a bad future.
Okay. So I'm going to jump ahead, but I think that you have a lot that you've been able to share with us, but can you also, you know, if you had to within, just look back, you know, and you're not that old, but you've got a lot of wisdom. What would you tell women right now who are feeling like, oh my gosh, I just can't, you know, I could never be like Ray, or I could never do, or whatever. If you could give us some advice, could you throw a piece of advice out there for women right now?
Yeah, I love this concept. In 2019, I facilitated a conference with Teach Better. And one of my sticking points I talked about was on this idea, what advice would you give? And, you know, it's that comparison game of, oh, I'll never be as successful as Mel, or I'll never be as incredible as Debbie, or I'll never have eyelashes like Ray. And then my joke was, well, yes, you can, because they're extensions, people. Like everything we can all achieve, right? These are all, you know, things that we can go after. And so for me, the secret sauce, the advice is that you have to choose to be connected. And it has nothing to do with having all the right answers. It has nothing to do with having the one dream and not pursuing anything outside of that dream. It truly is the choice to be connected, because there are so many supportive elements out there. There's so much help out there that the more conversations you have, the more dots you connect, the more you'll achieve. And I think that, you know, if everybody kind of carries the mindset of wanting to be a dot connector, then we'll be in a great spot.
Well, Ray, you have just completely summed up as if and what proceeding until apprehended means. You know, that you are choosing to dial in to positive energy for you. Mm-hmm. And it's only the energy that you can define as a person. My energy isn't your energy, or what gives you joy and, you know, fills you up. And it's really saying to the naysayers, all right, I move away from the negativity because I choose to increase my energy. And I'm going to start proceeding until apprehended to become what I inherently feel inside of me that gives me that, you know, it's just exciting. Like you come away and you're like, whoa, that was like great. That felt really good. It's that lane that we are talking to women about. Go and grab that lane. The one that just makes you bubble up with joy and excitement, more energy to put more work towards it because it's fun to do. And you have just your story and how you're living your life from moving away from being in learning programs to help you, people telling you you can't succeed, to becoming what you are today is truly an amazing story and is going to inspire so many people, Ray. So it's incredible.
No, I so appreciate it. It was so fun getting to chat with you guys. And, you know, if there's any way I can help anybody listening, I hope you guys choose to get connected with not only me, but, you know, also, you know, Mel and Deb, you guys are doing such incredible work that, you know, the community you're forming is very powerful. I'm honored to be a part of it.
You know, I'm just really thankful we met you, Ray. I'm truly thankful. What an inspiration you have been. And so, you know, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to another episode of Influential She. We always like to leave like with one big question so we can kind of encourage you to think about this. And Ray, you brought this up so many times today, but the question I want to leave you with is, are you living out what you envision yourself to be? So thanks again. We hope that you'll tune in again to Influential She.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.